There we go. I think this should work. So, 27 years working with students, small churches, large churches. Right now, currently, I'm the special assistant for LCU, and a lot of that is to expand student ministry in our brotherhood, and you're going to be hearing all over the country something that's happening with all of the student ministry programs in our sister schools. We're going to start a next generation youth ministry search because we believe we need to have the best trained youth workers to approach this millennial generation. And that's some things you're going to be hearing about. And then I work for Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I'm in charge of the Character Coach program in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's Tom Landry's FCA, and it's kind of a neat little honor to walk along with that organization. And I tell you that background to say that what I'm about to share with you is not just from a religious context of students, but I spend time with real-life, uncaged teenagers, but those also that have no clue what we're doing in our churches. Those who've never been to our churches. I felt a special call to do something at my age and with my experience to go into the world and to put believers in contact with students who had never come into the walls of our churches. And so for the last 6 years, I've been doing that with an athletic team, and now the Lord's called me to do that throughout our DFW region and also pushing up to the national level so we can get believers to walk along with sports teams to basically be chaplains. We don't call them anymore, but to be Jesus' presence in these sports teams, girls and guys alike. So that's kind of what I do, a little bit of my background. Man, a long time ago, this overhead projector in the corner, remember when that was crazy liberal wild stuff? We put the songbook down and we put overheads. I mean, I know, this is crazy. And so it freed the hands. We had a brother, if you're in this room, I don't mean to, it was just really bad theology. There were people so concerned about overhead projectors that it was actually printed in one of our brotherhood books that now we're in trouble because now that we've laid the songbook down, it frees the hands up for raising. Okay, that was a long time ago. That was crazy. There was clapping in the auditorium today, and some people were raising their hands. So we've kind of come beyond that. Now we teach with overhead projectors. Not anymore. We teach with these, like, PowerPoints and ProPresenter. We have videos. We are in a generation where we have the most trained youth workers. We have the best facilities, the most incredible speakers. We have all kinds of resources, and still we lose 50% of our kids. What do you think about that? 50% of them walk away. Now, way back in the day, we would say in our fellowship, well, you know, they're going to go to another denominational group. No, they are walking away from faith. I work a lot with Fuller Seminary, and Fuller Seminary has included us. I'm kind of their Church of Christ boy, okay? And so our research is included in their research. Our kids are included in their studies that show 40 to 50% of our students that go through these youth ministry programs, which are outstanding, still leave. And that's not acceptable to me. So I started way back in 2007. My wife and I spent a summer at Fuller when we first started at the Hills Church. They let me go for a whole summer, and I began studying intergenerational student ministry, Deuteronomy 6 type stuff. It's a lot to do. You may have been to an Orange Conference or a D6 conference. Now Sticky Faith that has come out of Fuller. All these entities are getting together trying to figure out what do we need to do to package the faith in such a way that this next generation hears it, but receives it from us. And so I cannot give you a breakdown of everything about millennials. I'm going to give you two things that I believe are significant that we have to do if we're going to listen to millennials about Christianity and get them the gospel message so it'll stick. But I want to start with this. This is not rocket science. You'll think, why in the world did I crowd into this room? But here's one of the greatest truths you need to know. Whoever stands in front of you about millennials is this. Parents and the surrounding adults are the major player in a student's spiritual formation. That's it. Kinnaman's here. Been part of think tanks with him. Guess what? Same conclusion out of the Barna Group. Sticky Faith, same conclusion. Smith and Denton started in North Carolina. Now they're up in Notre Dame. Same conclusion. Right here, moms and dads and then the surrounding adults are the most important players in a kid's spiritual development. Youth ministry is a distant third. So think about that. What we do in student ministry is a distant third. So if you have students in your churches, if you have students that parents say, well, our kids just don't feel like they belong, we need to understand the first place those families need to look is at their own spiritual life, and then the adults they hang around with, and then they can throw stones at the church. That's just truth. Now, I couldn't say that when I was 21. Now I have gray hair and a doctorate in 47. I'm just telling you, it's not my fault. Okay, I can mess kids up. There's some things I can do to really mess them up. But I am not good enough to outteach what happens in the home and surrounding adult community. I'm not that good. So that's the truth we're going to begin with. So whatever you hear from anybody this weekend, and I know that's exactly where Taylor's going to end up, we need to look at ourselves as adults because we are the ones that created. This is going to be the most reductionistic thing you've ever heard in your life. But adolescence, you got to remember this, from a psychosocial side, what begins in the body ends in culture, which is what I mean. When the body begins to make changes and voices begin to change and people can make babies, that's what we say is the beginning of adolescence. We are the ones that determine when an adolescent has reached adulthood. Some of you were raised with a decision when you left high school. You could go to college, you could not go to college. You can go into the workforce, you could not go into the workforce. You can go to the military, not go into the military. You had options. Today, my wife, who's out in the hall, she's a counselor at a Title I school. Every one of those students are being told that you have to be prepared and you have to go to college. You ask a parent when they think they are done with their kids. It's not at high school graduation anymore, is it? It's in college and they're moving back home. That, think about this. We've created what we call the millennial bubble. We're the ones who gave the participation trophies. And I'm sitting here telling you that this group of millennials, this group of students that we're working with are going to do incredible things for the church. They're going to do incredible things for our world if we'll listen to what they're saying about Christianity. And that's what brings us to Star Wars and this idea of Starbucks. All right? I love Star Wars. I'm just going to say that, and may the Fourth be with you. Did not plan that. Did not plan it. You are so welcome. Here's some factoids we need to know about what happened with Star Wars. World records. It's absolutely incredible. Fastest film to gross $1 billion, 12 days it took to gross that amount. Biggest worldwide opening weekend and single weekend gross, $529 million. Hello, okay? Highest grossing Star Wars film ever. U.S. records, highest grossing film of all time, largest opening weekend, biggest overall pre-sales of 100 plus million. Now, it could be because the Disney machine was involved in it, but I think it's a lot more than that. Luke Skywalker conquered the dark side in the previous Star Wars movies. His latest mission in J.J. Abrams' Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, is to capture millennials. That's from Brent Lang from The Variety, which actually there, I just saw their offices downtown. He looks at film and media, and they're very big into that here in the Variety Corporation. That was his job. How do we take the old Star Wars story and capture the minds of millennials? Would you agree they did a pretty good job?
Yes.
They broke all kinds of records. Now, get this. This other guy, it's from the PMKBNC. It's the largest celebrity branding and science behind a lot of entertainment industry. He loves the awareness, likability, influence of research. He is the brand control celebrity for this organization, one of the leaders in the world. Here's what he said about Star Wars. To boomers and Gen X, sci-fi was an escape, a dream of the future. To millennials, get this, it's important. Science, sci-fi is a blueprint to them. Anything is possible. So that's how they've embraced it a little bit different than we did. Ours was an escape. But when sci-fi is shown to a millennial today, they're looking for a blueprint of how the world should be. Now, here's my takeaway from Star Wars. I want you to think about this. What does it mean? I believe when it comes to Christianity, millennials are searching for an epic story to follow. We presented an epic story in Star Wars. We packaged it so they would embrace it. But I think when they see Christianity today, when they see what we're trying to sell them, is our story epic enough? I believe that we're boring our millennials. Because here is what some of them receive from us, okay? That what you do is you grow up in church, you go to cradle roll, and the guys are going to help with communion after a while. Then in fourth grade, you come in, and the girls are no longer teaching you, but the guys, because you're at the age of accountability, we're going to study you up, we're going to baptize you. After we baptize you, then you're going to be able to serve in the nursery women. It's going to be cool. And then, gentlemen, you're going to be able to help serve on the Lord's Supper with your tie. Now, what we're going to do after that, we're going to go to LTC, you're going to get a lot of gold medals. People are going to like you, you're going to get a scholarship, you're going to go to Christian University. Go to Christian University, meet a Christian wife, have Christian babies come back to our church, and then then what you do is you become a deacon after you serve your time in children's ministry. And then you become a deacon and you make a lot of decisions about coffee cups on Sunday morning. And if you do well, you become an elder, make decisions on carpet, and then you die. Think about that. Wow! And some of you know what I'm talking about. And if you're an elder, you're like, you do not understand my job. I know, but that's what we think of when we think of Christianity. We're raising them to be nice Christian people, but are they being raised to be radical Jesus followers? I'm saying no. Sometimes I think we're more in tune with raising our kids to embrace our way that we produced faith and the way we lived out faith than really making them Jesus followers. Those are not the same thing in the world today. Would you agree? So let's go back to the beginning, and this is when we're going to talk, and you can be on the recording forever. But what gospel are we teaching our children? So let me just start with that question. I want you to respond. What is the gospel? You know, it's a trick question. Nobody's saying anything. What is the gospel?
Caring for others.
Caring for others? Okay. You know, interesting thing. The students that we researched that were part of the Sticky Faith program, we followed a group of graduates from high school into their college years, and we asked them questions, especially the ones who seemed to stay faithful to church. What was it about them? We asked them the question of what was the gospel. None of them mentioned Jesus. But they mentioned, well, it's caring, it's serving others, but they never mentioned Jesus. Isn't that interesting? Now, the gospel is what gives me, any behavior change comes from that grace-based gospel that gives me the ability to love others. But they never mentioned Jesus. Well, what is gospel?
Death, burial, and resurrection.
Thank you. I set you up for that. If you would have missed that one, we had a free spot here in front. 1 Corinthians, of first importance, here's what it is. Jesus, dead, buried, raised. I preached that one time in Amarillo, Texas. And I was just going to define what gospel was very simply. It's Jesus. That's our hope. Romans chapter 1, verse 8. I mean, that's what we have confidence in, is that power of the gospel. And this guy came up and said, Dr. Fraves. And anytime somebody uses doctor or calls you brother, call for an elder, because he's going to get out of it, okay? He used both of them, Dr. Brother Fraves. And some of my friends who were at Bart was there, by the way, he stepped away. All these people stepped away and like, oh, no, I'm like, you're leaving me alone. And this guy's like, you said something very dangerous. And I'm like, what did I say? You said the gospel was Jesus. Uh-huh. And I'm like, now I'm kind of like, nuh-uh, we're not going there. So I got my gray hair for a reason. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, Paul said, this is first among many things. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, well, I've been reading Greek commentaries. I'm like, no, I've looked at this, okay? That's why we spent a lot of money to get a doctor's degree. It does not say what you think it says. This is of first importance. The gospel is Jesus. And he said, but Dr. Fraze, if the gospel is Jesus, I'm not making this up, it's too good. If the gospel's Jesus, then anyone can be saved. And I'm like, and I hope that's the case. And how it sees itself and how it plays out when we talk to our students is this. We take John 15 and we get it backwards. Jesus said, if you love me, you will what? But the way some of us have taught the gospel is, if you keep this list of commandments, then maybe Jesus will consider loving you. If we teach that kind of gospel, what Dallas Willard called sin management, when a kid leaves our protective bubbles of youth ministry, private school, homeschool, whatever have protected you can be, and they go into the real world of colleges, they don't do very well. Because all of a sudden they've attached their behavior to the grace of God, and their behavior comes in contact with the real world, and they do not feel like their faith is authentic and real. And so they just walk away because it's too much. Y'all seen that, haven't you? Over and over again. The gospel is Jesus. And when you give your life over to the gospel, is it just so you won't go to hell or so you won't smoke with the deacons behind the building? Or is there something more? It's transformational, is it not? Mm-hmm. Try telling a 21-year-old, we're going to give your life to Jesus because one of these days you're going to die and I don't want you to go to hell. Did you think about hell when you were 21? You were weighing the consequences when you were in that car with that girl. I mean, I know you're sitting there going, can I still be saved if I do this tonight? If I take my grape juice and crackers? So we end up in this transactional type of relationship with the cross. That's not what it's about, is it? So look at these verses. Again, from the Great Commission. Go and make disciples. The go and make. Don't go on a fancy missionary trip. That's great if you want to do it, but as you go, how many sermons have we heard about this? That your life is mission. It is so easy to get kids fired up to go to a third world country because they're with their peers. That is not very much courage to do that. I'm going to be honest with you. That's an easy sell in student ministry. What's a harder sell is, I want you to talk to the student sitting next to you this morning that goes to a different school. I want you to be Jesus to them. Whoa! That's when you get the phone call from families. Because now the gospel's coming a little too real. Because now you're messing with our family and you have no business doing that. But that's what it says. I want to embrace that gospel. How about you? How about this one? Okay? But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. I love this. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives. Everybody say it together.
Among the pagans.
Somehow we've taught that the gospel separates us from the world. There's a guy named Alan Hirsch that gave a sad fact. He said that 3 years after most people that come out of the pagan world come into the church, 3 years they've removed all relationships from the world they came from. How do we do evangelism if we don't even like the people that we're trying to reach? And we tell them to come to us. When the millennials are living in a multi-narrative cultural world where their shoulders are rubbing against people of same-sex attraction, Muslims, poor, rich, whatever type of socioeconomic thing you can think of, they're rubbing shoulders and they want a gospel that goes and lives among, but also answers some of life's hardest questions. That is a gospel and a story that is epic proportion. Would you not agree? That's pretty incredible. So, some best practices. Three things I want to give you as far as just suggestions. One, invite millennials into the gospel story. Now, how do I do that? Let's use the Star Wars. Why is Star Wars such a big deal? I want to take you to a movie. It's the first thing I told my kids. I believe so much in Star Wars that I told my kids, I need to show you a movie. And I pulled out a VHS. Don't judge. And the quality was incredible. And we watched Star Wars. It was a story I wanted to share. They saw that I was authentically interested. Next one is, tell millennials your gospel story. We do a pretty good job up here. This one's more difficult. My kids love for me to say, you know what? I had a droid factory when I was in middle school. Yeah, dude, Dad, you were a geek. No, I was really cool back then. And I wish I would have saved that droid factory because I would have probably been a millionaire. But I had a droid factory. I would tell my story of my Star Wars story. There's a reason why my kids and I have pictures when we go to Disneyland of Star Wars characters and our faces on top of them. There's a reason that I have Jedi robes, okay? Don't judge me. I mean, there's a reason. I want to share that story with them. When we ask a group, probably about 23, 24 students, we ask, how many of you have heard of your parents' conversion story? How many of your parents have told you, or the adults in your life, this is why I follow Jesus? How many of them said they had heard it? Zero. Do your own kids know why you do this gospel thing? Do they know why Jesus is all to you? I remember my mother, who's now 82, she has COPD, so when she starts crying, I got to be careful because she can't breathe. And so we're driving back on 35W, stuck in traffic as usual, and she just started crying one day. And I'm like, are you having a stroke, heart attack? I mean, what's going on? I'm going to take care of my mom. And she said, I don't know where I would be without Jesus or your dad. Because one day, right here in Santa Monica, she used to chase sailors. I remember waking up on the other side of a chain link fence. I knew I was drunk. I'd woken up after spending the whole night there. And I'm like, whoa, 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 Mom, tell me more. What is going on? She goes, oh, I just can't. I'll start crying. She starts hyperventilating. I'm like, okay, that's enough for now. What did that do for the authenticity of my mother's walk with the Lord? But we don't tell our stories because our kids, you know, do we let them know everything? Yes. Have you turned on the TV lately? Well, would they think, maybe it'll give them permission if they knew that grandma used to drink beer. I mean, a lot, Dr. Fraze. They probably figured something's out. And that's probably why every time you see a beer commercial, you turn the channel. There's probably some reason. They know. Share your story. What is it about the gospel that you embrace? And this one, keep the story first priority for reaching and connecting with millennials. The gospel, Jesus is our story. I was talking with Josh Graves, who does a lot, of course, with Muslim-Christian relationships in the Nashville area. And we were talking just when we should have been singing, but talking over there in the Firestone. And there's an amazing thing in our culture today. With the Muslim that he knows, and the Muslims that I know, I can talk all day about Jesus, but I can't necessarily talk about Christianity. You notice that? The world sees Christianity different than we see Christianity, but they'll still talk about Jesus. So when we talk about the gospel and this transformational thing, what millennials need to hear is an epic story of the God-man who came and lived and died and was raised that we can accept. It has changed our lives, and it is the very core of what we do. We're more interested in them knowing Jesus than our churches survive. We're more interested in them knowing Jesus than the form of our worship. We're more interested in them knowing Jesus than the institutions that we have supported. Because all of those things programmatically will change with the times. But Jesus is the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That is our core. And that's why Paul said it was the first important. Okay, takeaway number one. You got that? Okay. Now, what time are we out of here, by the way?
3:15.
3:15? So I got 15 minutes, I think. I don't know what's going on my computer. It's cool. Cupgate. What happened last Christmas? I mean, really? Come on. What happened? I drank my Starbucks. And I don't think Pepperdine loves Jesus because right here, if you looked at the logo, this woman's actually naked. And right here. And that's a... Wow. They're offending me. What was up with the red cups at Starbucks?
They took the snowflakes off, which must mean they don't love Jesus.
Thank you. Are you a millennial?
I'm on the edge, and I'm a youth minister, so I'm pretty screwed.
Millennials and youth ministers are screwed. You said that in a Bible class. That was not me. She used that word. So, and we never use that kind of language. You said more smoke with the deacons. That's all there is. Think about this. I watched it, and I thought, for sure somebody's punking on Christians, because adults are absolute cowards on Facebook. Let me just say that. Millennials in here, they laugh at you all the time, because you would never, ever say what you put on Facebook to someone's face. But somehow you think, well, I'm going to tell you what I think right now. Starbucks is devil's servant. You would not walk up to a Starbucks barista and say, your red cup's from the devil. You wouldn't do it, but you'd hide behind a computer. And so I'm listening to all of this stuff, and the millennials are laughing at us going, are you serious? It, you know, snowflakes, snowmen, the cross of Christ? I mean, can you make that connection? And if people would just go into a Starbucks store, they went through this color thing. Okay, I promise it had nothing to do with faith. They just went to solid colors and nice little patterns. All you had to do was walk into the Starbucks store. But some of us thought, I will not give these people my money because they took Jesus off of a cup. Well, how do you think Batman felt? Look at this guy. If you can't read it, it says, you know who doesn't get to celebrate Christmas? My parents. And it's a picture of Batman. from a millennial. Or a millennial saying, I want to show you what I feel about that, because they're looking at us arguing. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Starbucks, because Starbucks has captured this digital type of culture the millennials have and have created a physical space for them to be. Am I talking truth here? It's crazy. They may be on their phones next to each other texting, but they're in a physical location in a really cool place to listen to jazz music, okay? Just right here. Here's how they've done it. It's pretty amazing. Coffee's become almost synonymous with Starbucks for the millennial generation. The phrase, let's go get a coffee, almost always results in the iconic Starbucks cup that has taken over Instagram pictures and Twitter news feeds. Starbucks has become one of the top-ranked brands for millennials, and many companies are looking towards Starbucks as inspiration for millennial engagement. At Lubbock Christian University. We had a little coffee shop forever. I'm a coffee connoisseur. I did not like it. Dr. Perrin's like, hey, would you like to work at the university again? I'm like, hey, what's going on in university? He said, and we have a Starbucks. I'm like, so, am I making this up? It was amazing. You know why? Because when I walked onto campus, there is something about that brand of millennials that say, you've arrived because you've created this environment. You're like, I could buy five children for a cup of coffee. I get it, okay? But there's something about that environment. So, think about this. When Christians begin to attack something that has become a home for millennials, millennials take us if you're attacking who? Them. And saying, you don't understand who? Them. You don't understand us. Jeff Fromm, Millennial Marketing, said this. Starbucks is talking the millennial talk and walking the millennial walk by going digital, offering relevant rewards, and creating an environment, I love my app, where millennials want to be with others face-to-face. That is difficult to get from digital world to face-to-face world, but it happens all the time at Starbucks because they've figured out the secret. I'm going to talk their language, I'm going to make this digital world relevant, and I'm going to bring them in. Right now, our online service at the Hills Church probably has more members than any of our satellite churches have. And when I preach on Saturday or Sunday at the Hills, excuse me, Sunday at the Hills. Saturday's a legendary service. When I preach on Sunday at the Hills, that will be sent out across the world. And now we have a digital minister that live feeds questions from the experience of worship. And now those people are starting to find their way into our church. But that was their first step. Starbucks has figured it out. So when we mess with Starbucks, we're messing with them, these millennials. There's a great publication. I would encourage you, especially if you work with teenagers or an institution like a university, go to The Odyssey. The Odyssey is a place online where millennials had the opportunity to speak about things they don't like or like. And here's one of the things about Cupgate. Now, back to this whole persecution thing. This is the picture of the real live millennial. What really gets me the most about the uproar over stupid Starbucks cup is that there are so many other important issues to focus on. There are people in the world who are actually persecuted. We acted like somebody was killing our children. And I'm talking we generally with the Starbucks cup. I've said over and over again, sometimes it's sad when we watch things on the internet. We get more frustrated about marriage issues, cup issues, whatever, than we do that people are going to hell without Jesus. And our millennials are like going, excuse me, you're forgetting the thing that makes the rest of these things even a relevant conversation. Okay? I have to show you another picture from a real live millennial. Look at this one. One family in one out of every three churches adopted a child from foster care, there would be no more orphans in the United States. But please, tell me more about how offensive this red cup is. Wow. Is there truth in that?
Yes.
Here's what I believe we need to get out of this. Millennials need a worthy battle to fight. That's the second takeaway. If you look at Star Wars, you're like, okay, they need an epic story to join. That gospel story, if we look at the idea of what we fight about, millennials need to follow us in a worthy fight. Something that's a little bit more important than this idea of a red cup. Got to show you something from Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live is, you may be totally offended by them, but Saturday Night Live has some of the best sarcasm and satire in the business. Now, any English teachers, what do you have to have satire? A degree of what? Truth. Listen as this millennial is trying to describe to Martin Luther King why Martin Luther King is important. His greatness.
I just need a little help.
Martin Luther King! What do you know about me so far?
Well, you're black. You're a great leader, and today you own a bunch of boulevards. The country made a lot of progress. You got a black president now.
Really?
Yeah, his name is Barack Obama.
Is it Barack or what now? Sounds like a Kenyan Muslim.
He's from Hawaii, but he's black, well, half black, Like, his mother was white, and his father was black.
Oh, so his parents are in jail?
No. You think the Selma and stuff is still going on today? There were big protests about police violence just this year.
And these protests, did you join them? Like, are you part of the movement?
Oh, yeah, I definitely protested. It's really easy now. You just take your phone here, right? Push this Twitter button, right? Then type in hashtag I am Ferguson, or hashtag we're all black, or hashtag blessed.
My brother-in-law worked at an inner city school as well, and we had these series of protests for reform of immigration. He worked in a heavy Hispanic school, and his middle school kids just left the classroom. We're going to leave. He's like, why are you leaving? This will be an unexcused absence. He goes, we're going to protest immigration. He's like, no, you don't want to do that. You're not understanding what this is about. We're going to protest immigration. And he goes, I will give an excused absence if you go and talk to an older Hispanic and ask what in the world is going on and why you're actually protesting. And so they did that, and they got an excused absence. Sometimes kids just get all excited and upset. They do need a battle to fight, but they still need adult direction. They look to us and figure out, why are we fighting? There are a lot of things that we as a church need to handle. Race relations is a real issue. It's a real issue. Okay? Socioeconomic diversity is a real issue. What do we do with same-sex attraction? Real issue. What we found out at Fuller is if kids felt the freedom to express and explore doubt when they were in high school, guess what? They did better retaining their faith because they had a group of adults that were not afraid when a kid says, why are we the only ones going to heaven? Why do we use the instrument? Why do we not use the instrument? Why is gay marriage wrong? Why, if they in our situation get to express, explore their doubt, they do better because they learn from us what are the battles and why are we fighting and what is this all about? So we got to be careful with that. Here's what James tells us. Religion that our God and Father accept as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. They love that one. They also love Micah 6:8. Here's what I require of you, to walk humbly with your God. They also like to go to Jeremiah 7, which Jesus quoted when he went to the temple and said, don't come into this place, say, holy, 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 and peace, peace, when outside you're oppressing the poor. So they're looking for worthy battles to fight. And isn't this exactly, this is kind of a hot button of mine. Because what do we get fired up with at the church today? Again, that our culture is changing. I believe we get more fired up about the things that are changing in our church culture than our actual core of our epic story of Jesus. Now some of you are looking away going, okay, he's meddling. But I go to two stories of Jesus that challenge me every day. The Good Samaritan. The leaders of the law, wanting to quantify and qualify their service, asked Jesus a question. Who is my neighbor? Interesting thing about this story, Jesus never answered the question. Have you noticed that? What he did is come back with another question and say, are you a good neighbor? And he used a Samaritan, a half-breed in their culture, to make that point. And our millennials love that story. Who are the ones on the side of the road and who are the ones rendering aid when we're not because we're too busy fighting about red coffee cups? This one, sheep and the goats. Don't they love each other? It's awesome. This story kind of horrifies me. It makes me nervous because when Jesus comes back and he judges all things, it's like who goes to the prisons, who takes care of the poor, who clothes the naked. Those were the conditions of the judgment. I'm not going to bring up 1 John 4, but I just did. Think about what we've done, okay, in our churches for a unity movement that started as Christians, Christians only, sola scriptura, picking up that from the Reformation, let's Bible, Bible only. Have you looked at Where the Saints Meet book lately? Have you seen all of our divisions? Do you think our kids see that and go, I can't worship Derek, but I can worship here and here? What is the difference here? What is going on? Why are we fighting about those things? Is that a worthy battle when there are people that don't know Jesus that don't have clothes tonight? Or there's people in our prisons that don't know Jesus. They want a worthy battle to fight. We just had Jen Hatmaker, who all the ladies are like going, yeah, gentlemen, I'm going to say this. It's being taped. It's one of the best sermons I've ever heard in my life. I had a deal. I won't say which board member it was, but a trustee of LC, I looked at him. I said, okay, this is a girl speaker. I don't even have to wear a tie. I don't even know what's going on. There's a lot of flowers and frilly stuff. If this gets way too much estrogen, I want you to walk me up to me, just hit me in the face, and we'll walk out. Okay, and he's like, deal. He loved it so much, he walked by and he's like, this is great, I'm not even going to hit you. I mean, it was the best sermon I've heard in a long time. And here's something she said. This sweet little girl, okay, said this. We have enough knowledge in our fat heads, we need to do something. And she goes, oh, I shouldn't have said it that harsh. But how many Bible studies about service do we have to do? How many Bible studies do we have to do about what we believe? How many Bible studies in small groups do we have in meetings? She's like, hey, we're overthinking this. You take that epic story of gospel, okay, Star Wars, if you will, and you go and you find a worthy battle to fight where that gospel intervenes into real life. That's what she was saying. So here's some practical best practices. Talk the talk. If Starbucks learned how to do this, talk the talk. Ask them, what is going on? What is it like to be in your world today? Again, a Starbucks cup that I loved years ago. I was working on my doctorate, and I love coffee, so I'm drinking. And it's during the time where they would put quotes on the side. And the creator of Community and Schools said this, if you want to know what's going on in culture, ask a question and shut your mouth, because it's virtually impossible to not listen when your mouth is closed. Talk the talk with them. What are you upset about? What keeps you up at night? What are you concerned about? They may not talk to you, but they may talk to another adult. If I ask my real-life uncaged teenager that sits in my home, I realize that. He's like, rolling eyes. My daughter's like, let's go to Starbucks or do something. But we need adults that ask our kids questions, talk the talk, and just ask them the question, what's going on? Can we find that out of Sticky Faith, that there's so many adults that aren't connected? They're connected programmatically, but they don't have real conversations. And when adults have real conversations like this with teenagers, the story becomes real and the battles become relevant. Follow me on that? Okay, next one. Walk the walk. This is the coolest compliment I've ever got. One of the things that I do is I coach at a 6A, now it's 5A. Thank the Lord we moved down a level in Texas. I work out with a gentleman who is a believer. I can't tell you very much because of the tape. Let's say him and his wife have been off and on, but his wife's wearing the wedding ring now after a few years, and it's kind of cool, and he's kind of a rough behind the edges, and I could tell how he's doing by the number of F-bombs he throws out when I walk in. And I can tell when I walk in if he says, hey, it's Coach Fraze, or here comes the spiritual coach. I know how he's doing. So I've spent about 6 years with him now. And the other day, he just looked at me and says, Coach, and I said, yes, sir. And he goes, you let me listen to my music. You have real conversations with me. You don't judge me when I do bad things. You just love me through them. He said, I think Jesus would be like you. And I'm like, don't cry in a weight room, but I really went, like, thanks, man. I'm never, okay, go outside. I mean, it was kind of a neat deal, and I fail all the time. I'm thinking somehow I walked the walk with him enough in his ugliness and his beauty and saw something. And then what our kids, he's a millennial coach, by the way. He's that age. Create environments to talk about walking issues. Can I talk to you about this again? The freedom to express and explore doubt. If you have a church where you are giving propositional truth and you don't allow students the opportunity to interact with you on some very tough issues, they're going to cut you off. Am I speaking truth? That's just what happens. We lived in a world that was an awful lot like an apple. It's called the modern world. If you get an apple, you cut it in half. What do you have? Seeds that come from a what? A core. And you take the seeds, you plant them in the ground, what are you supposed to have? An apple tree. And the apple tree doesn't grow. Is it the seed's fault? No, it's the ground's fault, because it wouldn't grow the apple seed. That's the way you and I were taught. God's real. Leave it alone. If you don't like it, go down the road. See you later. God's real. Our church may be dying, but narrow's the way. And we're going down in flames. And we love it. Church growth be damned. That's what we do here. Now, today, I want you to think of an onion. This will blow you away. Cut an onion in half. What do you have? Nothing. It's not a cord thing. It's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. That's a different way to view truth. So when I step into a young person's world and say, hey, tell me what's going on. Tell me about this. It's very easy for me to say when they talk to me about, and I'm telling you, they'll talk to you about bukus of things when you begin to practice the first two. When that begins to happen, they're going to say, I believe this to be true. I believe this to be true. Oh, I heard this. And they will literally believe that what they believe is true, even though they may not be quoting scripture. And I don't think they have a leg to stand on. I literally just got through talking to a theology professor here at Pepperdine. And one of the things that concerns me is our students are leaving our Christian universities without a belief in the authority of scripture. And that kind of concerns me a little bit. And a lot of us, because we don't know how to have a conversation with them. We haven't done a very good job of explaining the authority of Scripture, and they live in a world that's onion-related. This is your words, but how do we know those words are any better than anybody else's words? It's an onion culture. So our walking and our talking the talk are very important, and then the environments in which we let them to throw spaghetti on you, the wall, if you will, we got to be able to be patient with them. Okay? This last one, do service and justice with the millennials. If I don't say the word intergenerational, I get kicked out of the academy. This is the word, intergenerational. It's a not bi-generational, by having the generations together. Intergenerational means we are doing intentional things together. This is a big mover and shaker in the church today. And I will say, as churches of Christ, we are leading the way in this intergenerational thought because we are one of the last major denominational groups that actually have their children as participants in their worship service. Most of the major churches have kids service, youth service, adults, and they never get together until they get in the car and leave to go home. We still do it, and I believe we're doing it right. We're actually outside of the bell curve on research because they don't know what to do with this. It comes easy to us. But one way that we have failed, and I want you to think about this, we've sent youth ministers on trips with our kids and say, go to the other side of the world or go to these service projects, or even worse, when we're not wanting to do it, for instance, somebody moves into our church, well, that person needs help, so what are we going to do? Call the youth minister. We're totally telling our students, we don't understand your world's different, we don't understand you're busy, so go ahead and do the work that we don't want to do, and it cheapens service. Amen. Okay? I did a very dangerous thing. I did not get fired the first year I was at the Hills. You know the truth, that women's ministry is usually conducted by someone who's married to an elder, okay? So if you make the women's ministry upset, if you don't put a shower in the bulletin or something happens, you're going to get phone calls saying, excuse me, we've always done it this way. Well, I get a phone call from the women's ministry chairman at the Hills and said, David, the women's ministry is about to have their conference, and as usual, I need the men and ladies to come and set up the tables and chairs for the event. And I took a deep breath and went, we're not going to do that. Long pause. And I go, can I give you another suggestion? Long pause. So why don't we contact the men's ministry and have them serve you and help you set up things, and they can ask our young men and women to come and help, and they will work together and they will serve you at their event. And then when we have our conference, you take the women and you come and make announcements, and you all work together, young and old, to serve the men. And right now at our church, two cool things. We have a women's conference and men's conference, and there are loads of women from really elementary school to senior adult, and when the women have their event, elementary school to senior adult men that serve them, and the generations have come together, and the service they do is done intergenerationally, and it raises the standard. We are doing something to support the women or the men in our church. You see the difference? So also, just sending kids over to the other side of the world so they'll be more respectful and more thankful for what they have, Christian voyeurism, whatever you want to call it. What needs to happen? What happens if we start serving together? We have this project. All of our small groups at the Hills serves at an apartment complex, the same apartment complex that has volunteers from our adult ministry, so that any given Sunday, all throughout the year, young and old come together and serve. And when Rick actually gets up to speak, he doesn't just talk about, isn't it wonderful what our kids did? He mentions them the same way that he mentions our full-time missionaries that are on the other side of the world. He just talks about missions intergenerationally because we are going to do this as a church, not you are going to do this because it'll make you better Christians. This is what Jesus followers do. Do you see the difference? So those are the things that I want to share with you. Two lessons you can learn. There's a lot of stuff going on with millennials. Every week I will get, almost every week, at least every 2 or 3 months, somebody will say, Dave, have you seen this article? Have you seen this stuff? We're losing our millennials. It's crazy. And every once in a while I'll get a cool video like you just saw. There's a lot of stuff going on. But I'm telling you, if we would do these two things, the lessons from Star Wars and Starbucks, if we were to take our gospel story and make it epic, if we were to take the battles we fight and make them worth fighting and raise the level of our combating to something worthy of fighting about, you'll start to see these millennials thinking, okay, this is, and here's the key word, your faith is authentic. And I want that because that authentically answers how I want to live faith in the world today because I've seen it in you. Because we are the impactors of a student's spiritual direction more than anybody else. All right? Let me pray for you and we'll be gone. Father, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for this beautiful campus, Father. We thank you for years ago how people have been gathering here all over our brotherhood. Father, I pray that you would be with us. Would you let us listen to what the millennials are trying to tell us about the gospel they're receiving? Father, would you help us to creatively think of ways to make it epic for them by being authentic, just incredible followers of Jesus ourselves? Father, would you let us battle about things that are of eternal significance? Father, would you let us think of the Good Samaritan story? Would you let us think of the goats and the sheep? Father, would you let us know that it is love acting out, Father, that you're really concerned about? Father, just bless us. We love this generation. We believe in this generation. Father, give us the wisdom to approach them and to give them our story so that they'll have it and they will be impacting the world for generations to come. Through Jesus, we all say.
Amen.
Thank you all for being here.